And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, positive talk radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests is discussing an interesting topic, no two of which are related. My next guest is a celebrity economic researcher and analyst. He's been right throughout the 1990s and the 2000s. Now he looks ahead to the 2010s with a dire prediction from his book, The Great Crash Ahead. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Harry Dent is president of H.S. Dent Foundation, whose mission is helping people understand change. His first book, The Great Boom Ahead, stood virtually alone in forecasting the unanticipated boom of the late 1990s. Harry's analysts state that demographic trends are the greatest driver of our economy, along with radical new technologies working together. They follow a four-stage life cycle of innovation, growth, shakeout, and maturity. Harry is a Harvard MBA. He's a Fortune 100 consultant with Bain & Company. He's also a new venture founder and investor and, of course, a noted speaker. Harry offers a refreshingly positive view of the future with practical applications at all levels. His economic research is actually stemmed from his hobby of studying history and long-term cycles, and Harry's other great passion is travel. Welcome to the show, Harry. How are you today?
Nice to be here, Bill.
Well, thank you for being our guest here, and you've got some splaining to do, as Ricky would say to Lucy. I mean, generally, you're a very realistic and tend to be positive forecaster, but your predictions for the next 3 to 9 years are dire. Now, you've got 10 or more of them, but I'm just going to hit a couple highlights here. Unemployment's going to rise to 15% or higher from where we are today. Home prices will fall again and end up down 55 to 65% by the year 2015. Stock prices are likely to rise in the late part of 2011 or early 2012, and then they're going to crash down to 3,300 on the Dow. That would be a 9,000-point drop. Commodities will crash, and interestingly enough, the U.S. dollar is going to rise. So why are you so bearish after being so bullish for over 20 years?
Well, there's two things. I mean, we were bullish because we saw the baby boomers, the largest generation in history, and then what people do, they enter the workforce in their early 20s, they get married, they have kids, they buy houses, they borrow money, they spend money, they get their kids through school, but at age 46, they peak. I mean, this is something we know, like a life insurance actuary knows when you're going to die. Peaks at age 46, kind of plateaus at age 50, then people spend less the rest of their lives, not because they're living worse, because they don't have to spend money on their kids, they don't need a bigger house and stuff. So we were more bullish than most people in the late 80s, 90s, and 2000s. We said this boom was going to continue to go higher than anybody thought because of the size of this generation. But even back in the early 90s, in the book The Great Boom Ahead, we said, look, from 2008 to 2023, you get your next extended downturn. It's going to be what we call the winter season, following a fall bubble boom, and it's going to be deflationary in prices. What happens is during strong booms like this, interest rates get really low, new technologies emerge like crazy from the 1970s, and you get, you know, speculation and, you know, tech bubble, and then we got the housing bubble and the emerging market bubble, and now the commodities, the now gold and silver bubble. We get all these bubbles, and finally, when the generation slows down in its spending and gets too much in debt, this whole debt bubble, this whole asset bubble deflates, and things go down. So it's an inevitable consequence. It's just like the Great Depression followed the Roaring Twenties and the last big technology revolution, that this greatest boom in history would end up in a crash and in another kind of deflationary period where we have to get rid of $42 trillion of dollars of debt. People don't realize how much debt was created in the private sector. All they see is the government debt. We have three times as much private debt.
Wow. There's a lot in that answer. My guest is Harry Dent, and I want to pick it apart piece by piece if we can and really dive into it a little bit deeper. But I want to start with the deflation, because you said that you see deflation ahead like the 1930s that followed the 1920s. Most people, though, are taking a look at this debt crisis. They're seeing the Fed printing money without stop, and they're predicting that there's going to be inflation. So why do you see deflation when everybody else sees inflation?
Well, the government is inflating, but they're inflating because they're desperately fighting deflation. When the banking system melts down, a lot of the loans that got made, and the way we create money it's not primarily the Fed. The Fed allows banks to create money. We create money every time a bank makes a loan. We create money out of thin air. So we created all this debt. Now, that debt started to deleverage and started to fail when home prices fell, and the Fed stepped in and did not want deflation or deleveraging of debt because it's so difficult for the economy short term. So they put trillions in stopping it. So we've gotten only a minor amount of inflation now with the greatest stimulus plan in history. If the Fed had put this much money in the economy 10 years ago, we would have had 10-12% inflation. So the truth is the government's already fighting deflation. It's already the trend. They're inflating, but the trouble is a couple trillion here, a couple trillion there. It doesn't compare to the $20 trillion in net worth that's been lost. And I think about $20 trillion in loans is going to be written down in the next 3 to 5 years or so. So it's the private debt being destroyed faster than the government that gives you net deflation. More debt destroyed. And in the Great Depression, the government didn't do all this QE1, QE2, so the private system just deleveraged. And in 3 years, our debt ratios went from 200% of GDP to 50%. It was actually a good thing to get rid of that much debt.
Well,
it was painful.
Now, that begs the bigger question. All right, we've got the government printing money. They're trying to prop up and fight this deflation that you're talking about. What's going to be the inevitable outcome of all of this, and what should we be bracing for?
Well, I think what happens, we said from the beginning, since they're fighting 92 million baby boomers that now want to save and not spend and borrow, because that's what happens when you go from your 40s to your 50s, and they're fighting this deleveraging of so much debt, especially the financial institutions levered up unbelievably, like no time in history, that the Fed's going to lose this battle, because it comes to the point, okay, you do a trillion here in TARP, then you do a trillion here in consumer stimulus, you do $2 trillion in QE1 and QE2, comes a point where you keep doing this and the bond markets lose faith. When they see the economy not coming back with this much stimulus, all they see is deficits down the road and more debt, so they start raising your interest rates. They already did that in Europe. You know, Greek interest rates went from 4.5% to 14% overnight. Now they're at 24% on a 10-year bond, which pretty much says you can't borrow and stimulate anymore. You got to get bailouts from the ECB in Europe to survive. So at some point, the stimulus fails. Another thing we see, a couple things we see happening as triggers, banks have been holding back massive amounts of foreclosures. They don't want to kill the market. They're hoping it's going to get better down the road. Well, here we are years down the road. Housing hasn't bounced at all after the first drop. Lowest mortgage rates in history. Biggest stimulus program in history. The housing market is dead. I think banks are going to have to start accelerating their foreclosures back onto the market, and that's going to bring home prices down. And when home prices go down farther, then people are going to really realize we're not out of this banking crisis, and these banks got to write down these loans. The other thing we got short-term inflation. It's up near 4% now. How long, you know, what if it goes to 5%? How can the government keep stimulating if we're getting low growth and rising inflation? So I think the Fed's running out of bullets here, and I think it's a matter of months or you know, several months at most before this thing just goes the other way.
All right. My guest is Harry Dent, author of the book The Great Crash Ahead, Strategies for a World Turned Upside Down. And let's explore that if we can for just a second, Harry, because we're coming into a presidential election season. I mean, if what you say is true, the Fed is out of bullets. What's going to happen, and what will be the impact on the 2012 presidential election?
Well, you know, it's funny. Normally, you wouldn't be predicting for stocks to go down election. Election year tends to be good because that's when the government most pumps up the economy. But you got Obama in office with the Republicans saying, we don't want any more stimulus, any more debt, any more spending. So they're going to fight anything he does on the fiscal side, and they already are. And you got the Fed kind of saying, oops, looks like we're about out of bullets, you know, we don't really want to pump more money in the economy and risk inflation and greater speculation bubbles. So, you know, it just may wind down and we may have a bad economy in election year. Now, that would be bad for Barack Obama. On the other hand, you've got Republicans that don't have a strong candidate, and they're going to end up nominating somebody pretty much far to the right at a time when people are starting to riot and saying, hey, I think the 1% of the richest people in this country have run away with the economy and nobody else got much benefit. So I think the election is still a 50-50. In a worse economy, normally you say the incumbent doesn't have a chance, but with an extreme candidate on the Republican side and with some of the type of dissatisfaction that are coming up with people, It's going to be pretty hard for them to vote for a Republican that pretty much says we got to lower taxes, especially on the rich. So I think the election thing is a question mark. To me, it never matters to us that much. Short term, yes, but long term, we've made all our predictions without saying, you know, it's going to be a Democratic or Republican president.
That makes a lot of sense. My guest is Harry Dent. Harry, one other thing I want to cover, and then I want to come back and talk about some of the many points that you've already brought up. But most people think that the U.S. dollar is going to crash because of this endless printing of money. However, you're contrarian. You see it rising. How and why do you see the dollar getting stronger in the face of the Federal Reserve printing all this money?
Well, it's the same logic, and when we deleverage, when this debt gets written off and more private debt gets written off than public debt, you are destroying dollars. And then when you have fewer dollars, that's fewer dollars chasing goods, that's deflation. And when you have fewer dollars in the world, it means they go up in value. Well, we tell people our dollar, most people don't realize, it's been going down since 1985 under Ronald Reagan. It was down for 20-some years, 60%. We've already debased the dollar. When we created $42 trillion in private debt, three times the rate of the growth of the economy, that's how we debased the dollar. Now, even though the Fed is trying to debase it worse by creating trillions, the dollar has actually only been sideways to up since the crisis started. It bottomed in January of 2008. $2 trillion of quantitative easing should have pushed the dollar down much lower. The dollar has strength because of the deleveraging of the private debt, and when we get into this crisis and the private debt deleverages faster than the government deficit, then the dollar will go up in value. But just the fact that the dollar's held up this well when the Fed has literally torpedoed it as much as it possibly can already says that the dollar's stronger than you think it is.
All right. Well, that's a very cogent argument. Now I want to circle back and talk about some of the things that we've already covered here, because in reading your book, one of the things that I noticed is that you don't take into account the growing middle class worldwide. What impact is 1.1 million Indians and 1.5 billion Chinese going to have on the world economy and the world markets? Because those are, well, China in particular is a younger market than the United States. So you've got more and more people coming into the middle class. Aren't we just going to be able to have the Chinese buy up all of our goods and help us come out of this recession?
Well, that'd be nice if they did buy up all our goods. 3% of our GDP is exported to all of Asia. I mean China, Japan, Korea, India, all of Asia, 3% of our GDP. So they don't buy enough of our goods. We buy more of their goods. That's mm-hmm. why we run trade deficits. We covered that. We covered that in the China bubble in this book. A book before the Great Depression had. We had a chapter, I think six it was, 70-some pages long, and we looked around the world. We looked at how fast emerging countries are urbanizing, becoming middle class. Number one insight, everybody thinks the Chinese are going to be as rich as us. They will not be. There's not one emerging country that has a GDP per capita, even once they fully urbanize at 80% of more than $12,000, and a lot of them are $6,000 to $7,000 in Latin America. You've got places like the Philippines and Kenya that are $2,000 to $3,000 at best. So they don't get as rich as us. Yes, there's a lot of them. And there's no question China's going to grow to some degree, but we see the biggest growth economy is India. But again, they buy very basic stuff. And then until they start buying a lot of stuff from us, which they're not yet, it's not going to offset the slowing of our baby boomers. But yes, we agree 100% that we come out of this crash, the greatest boom ahead is going to be in emerging countries, billions of people urbanizing and becoming middle class around the world. But middle class to them, it's like $5,000 a year. It's not like $50,000 a year for us.
All right. My guest is Harry Dent. One other thing that is crucial to your analysis is the convergence of the age waves that you talked about and technology waves. And you talked only briefly about the technology wave, things invented in the 70s coming to fruition today. My question to you is this, Harry. Will green technologies, things that are going to help us with our environment, are they going to allow the United States economy to grow at maybe a 5%, even a 6% clip in the future? Is that going to help us invert that technology curve that you talk about?
I don't think we'll grow that fast again because it is a combination of demographics, and our demographics will never be as strong with the next generation as there was with this one. And our technological leadership may not be as strong as it was since the last one, but kind of once in a lifetime, and especially once in a generation, you get major new innovations like automobiles and electricity and that emerged into the roaring 20s. And, of course, the internet and broadband and wireless phones and a lot of things in this recent revolution. That revolution has saturated our economy in developed countries. But 90% of households have internet and, you know, broadband and wireless phones and all this sort of stuff. So the next revolution is incubating. It takes about 14 years for those revolutions to move mainstream, about 14 years for the next one to incubate as they mature. So we do see things like nanotechnologies and green technologies and robotics and biotech and stuff. We do see another revolution ahead, but it's probably going to hit more in the 2020s and 30s. It's not going to hit as much. All those technologies are in their infancy. These alternative energies and fuels and stuff and solar are a tiny, tiny percentage of our energy right now.
Oh, that they are. But, Harry, in that answer, one technology that you've overlooked, which is now about 20, 21 years old, is the human genome. We cracked the human genome code about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
What is that going to do for us in health and science area? That could also be a real technological boom.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean by biotech. I think that's part of the next revolution. But there's a long time lag. You got to remember, we invented the computer in 1946, and it didn't start to impact mainstream households until the 1980s with Apple Computer and Microsoft. It takes a long time for these technologies to come into practical applications that affect more than research labs or maybe large corporations, something that actually extends. If you get a biotech revolution that starts to extend the human lifespan from the 80s, you know, once you reach retirement, to the over 100, that's going to make a huge impact on our economy. People are going to work longer, peak in their spending later, you know, make more money, spend more money longer. Our lifespans went up in the 1930s through 1960s because of better standard of living and health care, and it made a huge difference in our economy. So, no, biotech could be one of the biggest things, but it's not a mainstream thing yet.
All right. Fair enough. My guest is Harry Dent, author of the book, The Great Crash Ahead, Strategies for a World Turned Upside Down. Harry, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, The Great Crash Ahead?
Well, you know, the major thing is, you know, we've had this, the greatest boom in history. That's what we used to call it way back in the late 80s. This is going to be the greatest boom in history. It's worldwide. It's baby boomers around the world. It's new technologies emerging, but we've had that boom. And you got to realize everything's gone up in value. You need to preserve the assets you have. You need to get out of excess real estate, investment real estate, and second homes. You need to get out of stocks and commodities. Let this natural bubble unravel over the next few years, and then you'll be able to buy stuff at the deal of a lifetime. But most people will not have the money yet because they're going to see their wealth destroyed like in 2008 and 2009.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a dire prediction. My guest has been Harry Dent. It has been a delight, Harry. If people are intrigued by what you have to say and they want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
HSDent.com.
HSDent.com. That is great. Harry, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay.
Thank you.